From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM next hour. The Anunnaki were here. Marshall Klarfeld joins us. Looking forward to that. So today was October 11, 2012. On the face of it, doesn't sound like much, but it's 10, 11, 12. 10, 11, 12. The number of people infected with meningitis has now risen for the fifth consecutive day since the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention began releasing figures about the deadly outbreak. The CDC announced that 14 people have died in 170 cases of meningitis so far. Kellogg's is recalling nearly 3 million boxes of its Frosted Mini Wheats bite-sized cereal and its Unfrosted Mini Wheats bite-sized cereal because of fears that they may contain metal fragments. The company announced that there was an issue with the manufacturing part of it. It's possible but unlikely that the fragments of metal mesh may be inside the cereal. Food safety coach Jeff Nelkin with us here. Jeff, another scary situation. 3 million boxes of Frosty Mini Wheats?
Well, you know, again, you know, in the process, they have metal detection, so it's interesting to find out, you know, why the metal detection system didn't pick this up. And number two is, you know, that they also have X-ray equipment that may be in place, again, you know, to watch, you know, the quality assurance of this product.
And so they're going to recall 3 million boxes, even though, as they say, maybe none have been contaminated, but I guess that's a safety issue.
Exactly.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much. You know, for the past 2 weeks, solar activity has been relatively low. Now a change is in the offing. The far side of the sun is peppered with sunspots, and some of them are beginning to turn toward good old planet Earth. We'll stay on top of that story. And listen to this. You think about a 5-carat diamond, maybe a 10. How about a diamond bigger than the planet Earth? That's right, orbiting a star that is visible to the naked eye. Astronomers have discovered a planet twice the size of our own, made largely out of diamond. The rocky planet orbits a sun-like star in the constellation of Cancer. It's moving so fast that 1 year there lasts a mere 18 hours. The vice presidential debates held tonight in Danville, Kentucky, between Vice President Joe Biden and Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan. Andy Dean is the syndicated host of America Now. He's conservative, but he calls it the way he sees it. I like the guy. Andy, what'd you think about tonight's debate?
Hey, George. Well, when it came to the viewers, they polled registered voters, and Paul Ryan got 48% compared to Joe Biden, 44%. So the viewers are split down the middle. I think the media is calling it a draw, except when the media does that, it often leans left. My perspective, I saw Paul Ryan. He could have been a little bit tougher. As for Joe Biden, he kept smirking and smiling and giggling.
I saw that,
the entire time, and I found that visually to be awkward and creepy.
Andy, in your opinion, how important is the vice presidential debates? Obviously, Mitt Romney had a huge jump because of his debate with President Obama. Two more of those coming up. But how important is the vice presidential debate?
Sure. The answer is not important, and not as important nearly as the presidential. I mean, last week's debate with Romney and Obama got 65 million viewers. I expect tomorrow when we get the ratings in, I bet this does half of that. It was going up against Thursday night football and a couple baseball games. And the vice presidential debates, and this has been shown throughout time since television got involved in debates in 1960, that the VP debates just don't matter.
They probably don't. You know, they interrupted each other a lot today. You're right about Biden's smirk and his smile. I didn't like that at all. I don't know. I would give this a toss-up.
Right. I give it a draw. But as I was saying, George, when it comes to a draw, I think the media spin will be Joe Biden came out fighting like an old boxer, and Paul Ryan looked a little bit young. So I think that'll be the spin. But for the most part, I think 5 days from now, we've got the second presidential debate, and that'll be the new storyline, and this will be forgotten.
I miss the days, Andy, of the tough old moderators, the Cronkite types.
Right, right. This moderator, Martha Raddatz, did a better job than Jim Lehrer in the sense that Jim Lehrer, it seemed as if it was past his bedtime when he was moderating. He just wasn't involved. Martha commanded more respect. She did a good job at the flow. Personally, though, I don't like when they're seated. When they sit down, it doesn't create a debate atmosphere like Lincoln Douglas. When they're standing up, it seems more professionalized and more substantive. So I don't like the seated debates. It's just weird.
I was watching Larry King tonight for a little bit on his internet TV, Aura TV, and lo and behold, there you were.
There I was. I was outnumbered by liberals across the board, but that's okay. I don't mind carrying the flag for conservatives.
Well, you know, the reason I like you, even though you're conservative, you call it the way you see it. You're fair, and that's important.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, you're the best. Bye-bye.
That's Andy Dean. He's got his own show called America Now. You know, there will be two more presidential debates, Tuesday, October 16th at Hofstra University in New York, and then Monday, October 22nd at Lynn University in Florida. And then here we go toward Election Day in November. A fire that destroyed 8 units of an apartment complex in Holland Township, Michigan, is believed to have been started by a man using a propane torch to cook a squirrel for lunch. I kid you not. The resident was on the deck of a third floor of the apartments. He was using a torch to burn off the squirrel's fur when the deck caught fire. Unbelievable. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the highlight reel. A guy was surfing along Pompano Beach in Florida. His name's Gino Covacci. He noticed a very small ball-like object at the high tide line. Well, he kicked it over, and he found himself staring at the biggest eyeball he has ever seen. The blue softball-sized orb he found was a departure from shells, seaweed, and things like that. He put it in a plastic bag, took it to the refrigerator, notified a police officer. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission came and took a look at it. They have no idea what species yet this giant eye came from. It's huge. Go take a look. Up next, Spirit and Healing. We're going to check in with Dr. Lynn Saputo next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Lynn Saputo, 1965 graduate of Duke University's Medical School, board certified in internal medicine. He had an awakening to deep flaws in conventional medicine. He developed a new paradigm that is known now as integral health medicine. He founded the Health Medicine Forum. That was back in 94. Went on to find and direct the Health Medicine Center in Walnut Creek, California. And it's one of the first integrative clinics. One of his books, A Return to Healing, Healthcare Reform. Here's Dr. Lynn Saputo back on Coast to Coast. Lynn, how you been?
Hey, fine, George. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be on this great show.
Always a pleasure, my friend. What's new with you these days?
Well, working hard on a website. I got this new website called drsaputo.com. And for about 2 years, I've been making audios and videos. We have about 2,200 videos now on the site.
That's huge.
Is that amazing? All from experts, from my wife, Vicky, who's been phenomenal with this. And with hundreds of people who are experts, world-class experts in different forms of healthcare.
Lynn, I've got to get your take on this meningitis horrible story that's been going on for a couple of weeks now, where this compound pharmacy apparently made these steroid injections, tainted them somehow. There's something wrong with them. And these people who've been injected, and 14 deaths already, and I'm sure that number is going to climb higher and higher. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can we do? Who can we trust in the medical field these days?
Well, it's a business, as you know, George. And people, when they're doing business and not really committed to what they're doing, you make mistakes. This happened about 10 years ago in my community, and there were a similar number of deaths. And what happened is it was contaminated with a bacteria that got into people and gave them meningitis.
Oh, my God.
It's a big thing. You know, if we're really committed to what we're doing and we're there, we're in the moment and we're focused and it makes a difference, what happens is huge in terms of the quality of what we do. So we're missing that. I mean, this culture basically is worried about the wrong things. We're worried about economics and narcissistic things. We need to evolve to a higher level of consciousness where we're really committed to doing the right thing and to have an epitaph that says something good rather than you got your gold watch at age 65.
I just can't imagine. You go to your doctor. You're complaining. You know, I got this bad back.
Right.
My spine's sore. Do something. And the doctor, you know, not knowing, obviously, that it's contaminated, injects you with a steroid. And then you come down with meningitis. And in some cases, like these 14 people,
right,
you're dead.
Well, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg. Think of this. There are, 8 or 10,000 deaths in Iraq?
Yep.
There are 400,000 deaths from medications in the U.S. every year. So if you go over 10 years, now you're looking at 4 million deaths. That's where the war is.
Accidental deaths. Basically.
Well, they are caused by medications and the expected and unexpected and mistakes that are made, but they all count.
But if they weren't on the medications, chances are those 400,000 people might be alive today.
Very good chance they would. So the real question is what do we do with health care? How do we turn it around? How do we get rid of the business side of what's happening? What do we do with stopping HMO medicine? How do we get our young doctors who are really wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and want to do all the good things that they can do in healthcare the opportunity to do what they feel is the right thing to do rather than have some, you know, some system that says, this is what you'll do, or have the government keep track of what you do? And then, you know, with these medical records they're talking about that have pluses and minuses, what do you do with that? It's got to change. We have to evolve, and we haven't.
What would you do if you were given just a blank check to fix anything you wanted about the medical community right now? What would you do?
I'd shift it from a disease care system where you expect to get sick and you're going to be using a system that is designed to make money as the primary thing. I'd get rid of that. And I would go right, and I wouldn't think that universal health care is the answer to that either. It isn't. Everybody deserves good care, but they don't deserve the care we've got. So it needs to be shifted to a wellness and prevention lifestyle-based medicine. And if we can do that, we would save so much money in healthcare expenses. It'd be a joke. We'd save 80 to 90%. And then we'd have all that money to spend on people who really need the system, you know, who would die without healthcare that we have today. So it needs to be rearranged, and it needs to be wellness and prevention. We need to move to a community type of society that's oriented to what can I give, share, and support, rather than what will I get in return if I do this particular kind of work.
How many mainstream practitioners, Len, out there are into holistic medicine, specialized spiritual healing? Many?
Yes, it's growing. 20 years ago, I was a quack. Today, people are starting to go, gosh, he's doing stuff that really makes sense. And we do need to look at the whole person. Why wouldn't you want to look at body, mind, emotion, and spirit? Why would you not want to do that? Only a disease care-driven model that posts direct-to-consumer ads in a fallacious sort of way be allowed to do what it does. It's because it's about the funds that are generated from what's being done in healthcare today. How can you spend $2.8 trillion, which is twice as much as most any other country out there, and three or four times the cost of most, and be ranked 37th in the world? You got to be a wizard to do that.
Remember the old days? I remember the doctor who delivered me. His name was Dr. Joseph McGough. He used to make house calls to
right.
us. He, you know, I hated seeing this guy show up with his big black bag. I hated it because
yeah.
I knew, uh-oh, it's one of us.
Shot, right.
Yeah.
I know.
But
I remember.
Do doctors still do that? I mean, do they go
to
houses?
There are doctors who take certain kinds of practices on. They're called concierge practices, where they're basically taking a set of dollars from you, say $25,000 a year, you take care of all their needs 24/7. And yes, they make house calls, but 99.9% of it, nah, doesn't happen.
It's gone. How did that land fade away? What happened?
Well, see, doctors didn't take responsibility for the cost of health care back in the 70s and 80s. And so it started to get out of hand. And we all wanted to do what was right. I never cared a bit what kind of drug I ordered or what it costs or what technology I needed. I just ordered it. And we didn't step up to the plate and look at healthcare costs as a big issue because it drove up expenses. And then the insurance companies got smart. They went ahead and decided that what they would do is buy our practices. And they got big enough that it became threatening to doctors in private practice to be able to be successful doing what they were doing the way they were. And so if that was the case, they were forced to really basically join if income was a big issue to them, which, of course, it is for almost everybody. So the HMOs came into existence. The hospital started buying practices. They gave us $300,000-$500,000 for our practice and said, you can have it for 5 years and continue to run it. But after that, doctor, we own the practice.
That's right. But you also got your salary too, right?
You bet you did. And it's still that way. But the problem is we've taken away the humanness in healthcare. And so what we do now is we have to answer to some bean counter who's saying, you can't do this anymore, doctor. It costs too much and it's not cost efficient. So what we defaulted on 20 years ago is coming back to bite us.
Yeah, it sure is.
So we need to stand up as a medical profession, which we failed to do miserably. Our AMA organization, I look at as a huge failure because we could turn all this off in a day just by saying, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to start doing things the old way.
I was online today, as I am every day, Len, and I was reading the St. Louis Post-Dispatch online.
Mm-hmm.
And a little old man, his body was found in his car at 4 a.m. outside of St. Mary's Hospital in St. Louis.
Oh, God.
Richmond Heights, actually, but that's a suburb. And he obviously was trying to drive himself to the hospital.
Yeah.
Trying to get to ER. He was like in the parking lot of the hospital, and they found him dead.
Yeah, sure.
Poor guy couldn't get there in time.
Well, things like that happen, you know, and you have to kind of take those in stride. But there are people who can't get health care. You know, we walk over people in the streets of San Francisco and New York and Chicago who are homeless. And yeah, we have money to fight wars and spend billions, even trillions of dollars. But we haven't got a few billion dollars to take care of our own.
Yeah, what do you do with people like that who are living in cardboard boxes, sleeping? I see them around Los Angeles,
sure.
You know, especially with the weather as nice as it is here generally.
Sure.
I mean, these people are on park benches. They're...
Well, step up as a human being. You know, change what we do. Have some kind of legal action that is changing the system that we have that's more narcissistic and oriented to power. Get a Congress that actually does something that is what the people want, rather than what is happening, that corporations are now buying Congress and controlling all the things that it's doing. And it doesn't have even a pittance of what our economic means are to be able to support these people, who are largely people who have had terrible abuse to them, very dysfunctional families. They may be post-traumatic stress people who've been in wars, lots of them. And we do a little bit, but that's all. It's sort of like people do what they can to do the best they can. They fail, and then we just say, well, we don't care about you anymore. What kind of a culture?
Well, and not all of them are alcoholics or anything like that.
Well, even if they are alcoholics, how do they get there? You know, these aren't just people that are irresponsible. These are people that can't cope with the lives that they've lived and what's happened
and
to
they've
them.
Given up.
Yeah, they've been physically, emotionally, and sexually abused. Nearly every family is dysfunctional. And when you have that kind of dysfunctionality, it leaves scars on you. And a lot of people, as hard as they try, it comes out in the form of post-traumatic stress, where you have panic attacks, or you have flashbacks, or you don't have to be in a war to have post-traumatic stress. Everybody has some. And those people that have enough of it are the ones that can't function in life. So they turn into drugs and prostitution and to all the things that we don't look at as great models. I can tell you that if I grew up in the Iron Triangle of Richmond, California, I would live in San Quentin.
Why?
Because that's what happens to people that live there. They're oppressed. They don't have chances to do what we have had chances to do. I mean, for God's sakes, I went to UC Berkeley and I went to Duke Medical School and all the finest places around. That's because I was able to do that because of where I came from. But
sure.
You take people in the ghetto, they got no chance.
No, they don't.
And so that's what happens. And so what we do is we look at these people as incompetent, as losers, as people who don't have any guts and they won't get a job. Try walking in their shoes for 10 minutes and see how you feel. More compassion will come.
I think you're right, Lynn. I think you're right.
So we have to evolve as a culture to a higher standard of consciousness, a higher level of consciousness, where instead of we're worried about ourselves in a narcissistic way and interested in materialism, the money and the comforts of life, we change that so that we shift to want to share and give and love and create community where our weakest link is our biggest problem. Wouldn't that be something, George?
Yeah, it would.
God, and it's possible, but, you know, we're all afraid of that. Who's going to be the first to do it? Who's going to be the prophet that moves forward?
Yeah, who's going to step up to the plate?
Exactly.
You know, I like cars. You know, my dad worked at Ford Motor Company during his day, and I like to take care of them. I hate it when they break down.
Yeah, right.
I try to make sure that they're maintained properly.
Good.
You know what? I want to prevent getting it broken down on a freeway somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, so I'll take care of things so they don't break down.
That's right.
And you know, you bring it in to the mechanic, you take care of things that could possibly go wrong.
Right.
Why don't they do that with the human body?
Oh, because nobody cares. See, the doctors care when they start out, and then they go through the training they go through where they're abused big time. I mean, it's brainwashing. I was on for 36 hours and off for 12, George, for months at a time when I went through my training. I would be so tired sometimes that I would take a cat nap for 3 minutes standing up.
Hold on, Len. I want to come right back to where we are. Plus, we'll take phone calls, questions for Dr. Lynn Saputo. or if you want to share your nightmare medical story with us, now's the time. Well, next hour, Marshall Klarfeld joins us. We'll talk about the Anunnaki. He says the Anunnaki were here, so we'll get his take on that. Well, here we go with Dr. Lynn Saputo. We'll take your calls as well. But, Lynn, we were talking about fixing the body, how important it is to do that, and you were right in the middle of it.
Yeah. I mean, fixing the body is important because people are suffering. But what we don't do is look at the meaning of illness in the context of an integral model. And what I mean by that is, what's the point of being sick? Was there a spiritual reason for it? Is physical disease the somatic or physical expression of psycho-spiritual dysfunction? And the answer to that, in my opinion, after 40 years of practice, is absolutely. And we missed that boat in the mainstream of medicine. So we've got to go back and look at our sites and what we're trying to put in them when we're looking at taking care of healthcare, of people who have diseases. Because it's not a war against disease like we look at the war against cancer and the war against heart disease and the war against all these things that we have wars against. The problem and reason we get sick is always, in my opinion, even when it's hard to understand, got a reason behind it that's spiritual. When we look at what happens in people who are sick, we don't do the healing. We doctors don't really heal anything. Nature does that. You know, Albert Schweitzer talked about putting us in touch with our inner healer as his function.
So true.
And he says we doctors stand by supporting the patient while Mother Nature does the healing. So that's what's happening, and that's what we've lost. Because when we had the Cartesian split a couple hundred years ago, and we, you know, the apple fell on Newton's head, and we thought, it's science that's going to solve everything, we didn't understand about spirit or religion. So we threw that back to the church and just ignored it. And so by proclamation, we said it doesn't have anything to do with science, so we're not going to deal with that. But science and spirituality are on a spectrum, and they're inseparable in so many ways, so that they always tell the true story of what's happening. We may not be smart enough to see it, but we want to look at every aspect of what a person is when we start talking about what are we going to do to it. And that's where that's how I see that, George.
You know, Lynn, a couple times a year I'll speak at the Health Expo, which they hold in L.A. and Chicago.
Right.
And every once in a while I'll say to the crowd, you know, hold up your hands, those of you who are interested in, you know, self-healing. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's hands go up. How many of you have been sick?
Right.
A lot of hands go up. It is amazing how many people in this country and in Canada come down with some kind of major affliction, not just a common cold.
That's right.
But something huge.
Well, it's a chronic, there's an epidemic of chronic diseases. And you have to say that all of our healthcare systems have failed. When 50% of America has a chronic disease, what does that say about the way we're responding to it? It's not just Western medicine that's not doing it. It's every other system as well. And there's a kind of arrogance from each discipline that says mine is the best and yours is not. And what we need to do is get together and have what I call an integrative model. And that's what we do in health medicine, which is an integrative, holistic, person-centered, preventive model. And that really does a lot to give you a kind of idea of where we should be going with health care. So that's why back in 1994, I put together this thing called the Health Medicine Forum and developed all these concepts of how we're going to treat people and brought it into clinical practice. And it's why, George, I have this website called drsaputo.com that has 33 health assessments that look at all the kinds of treatments we can do to treat people in an integrative, holistic way that's for free. So it's been a real interesting journey these last 2 years putting it together and watching people come to the site and use these things at no cost to try and help them understand what their healthcare problems are. So there is a resource for this.
All right, let's go to the calls. Essex, Connecticut. First time caller, Kathy's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Kathy, go ahead.
Hello, and yes, exactly what he's saying is what I believe, and also that is chiropractic care. I am a firm believer in firm believer because I have gone to it, been helped through it, especially the Gonstead method. And it's just sad with all of these ones that have died, their death could have even been prevented if their doctor was open to the chiropractic way of helping the spine, because it's so integrated with the whole nervous system. And that's basically what I just wanted to mention, that I just wish doctors would stop being so against these guys, these practitioners that know what they're doing. And again, I'm a firm, you know, I have experienced it. And that's basically...
No, you're right. You know, years ago, Len, they thought of chiropractors as quacks.
Absolutely.
I mean, people ridiculed them. In St. Louis, they've got probably one of the finest chiropractic colleges. It's called Logan School of Chiropractic. And, you know, now insurance companies will participate with them. That all changed. But what changed that? I mean, how did they go from being quacks to being somewhat accepted?
Well, it's about being a little bit open-minded and see if this works. Chiropractic works.
It does work.
And these people, I mean, chiropractors study for a long time to learn what they do, and to categorically just say we're going to throw it out by proclamation because we don't understand it is nonsense. I remember back when I was at Duke Medical School, and they said chiropractors are quacks, homeopaths are quacks, Chinese medicine people are quacks. And I asked them, well, what do we know about it? And there's like dead silence. They didn't really know that much. But they said, how could it be any good when you know that our system is the only one that works? What a joke. Of course, Flexner started all this back at the turn of the century, when there was a big political move to change the model of medicine from what it was that was more integrative to forcing it to be only the medical system or insurance wouldn't reimburse for it. And it still lives today. But it's changing because people like Kathy are trying these things. And it's still at a big disadvantage because people who do who practice these disciplines are minority groups, and they really need to do something to break loose of that and do something like what the state of Washington did for a number of years. And I don't know if they still do, but basically if you had a license that was issued by the state, insurance was forced to reimburse for it. I think that's the shift we need to do.
Okay, let's go now back to the phones. We'll go to Mark in San Diego, California. Mark, welcome to the program. You are on the air with us. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, George. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
That's good. Yeah, I wanted to call. I heard talking about the calling in for medical nightmares, et cetera. Mine began in 77 when I was hit by a car on a paper route.
Oh, my
I died
God.
Three times from that one. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I died three times from that one. Was in a coma for 15 days.
Oh, my.
Let's see. What else? I was paralyzed on the left side due to the head trauma for about a month.
All from the same accident?
From getting hit with the truck, or the car, rather.
Ugh.
Then in August of 88, just 11 years, and so not almost 11 years later, I coincidentally got hit by a truck.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
But you're a magnet for accidents.
I know. I figured it was my magnetic personality rather than bad luck, you know.
Well, Lenny's lucky to be alive.
He's very lucky to be alive. And I'd say in this case, thank God for doctors. You know, because I may sound like I don't think doctors do much for us. They do a lot.
Oh, they do a lot. And you know what? Some of the hardest working doctors are in those ER rooms.
Absolutely. They're saving lives like crazy, no question. See, the problem, George, that I see is that we don't have a perspective on how to use our system. We tend to start out with these invasive things that use drugs and surgeries and technologies before we do what could be done before that. And I have kind of a hierarchy of how I look at how to do that. The first thing we should be doing in a good healthcare system is preventive medicine. Should be doing lifestyle medicine. Eat right, get enough sleep, reduce your stress, exercise, weigh what you should, avoid toxic exposures, all those things. Do that first. If that doesn't work, turn to non-invasive therapies. Try Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, chiropractic, all the kinds of things like that don't hurt you. If that doesn't work, get aggressive. Use vitamins and minerals and supplements, right? And if that doesn't work, then you turn to the Western model and start using drugs, surgeries, and technologies, but only then because it's too dangerous.
Let's go next to Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Robin. You're on with us.
Hi.
Hi.
Doctor, how much is preventative medicine the best thing? Because when I was a kid, I never got preventative medicine, either that or dental. In fact, I was physically abused. I have actually, first time I had the bone doctor, he said I was so sorry, but, you know, a lot of the stuff, I'm disabled because of this.
Well, I think preventative medicine is critical, Len, and you would agree.
Absolutely, because we need to educate There's about, I'd say, almost everybody in our culture has a certain amount of what I call post-traumatic stress. It doesn't have to be flashbacks from a war vision that you have. We have dysfunctional things that involve the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, and sexual abuse. It's very, very common. Probably 20, 25% of the culture has sexual abuse as part of their life when they grew up. And when that happens, the consequences of that are disastrous. And it takes a lifetime sometimes to undo it. And it leads to a lot of the things like we see in eating disorders. People are getting overweight or having anorexia or bulimia. Relates back to things like that so often. So prevention, yeah, education is the key. And, of course, we need to get a government in Congress that understands this and is willing to look past the economic issues we have that are holding things in check.
Let's go to Sumona, California. Alexia is there, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Alexia.
Hi, Doctor. I'm your neighbor up here in Sonoma, and kudos to you for your approach to recognizing the human underpinnings that you just mentioned, the sexual abuse and physical abuse. I myself am in that category.
I'm sorry.
You mentioned, thank you, the government. I'm fearful that maybe some of the people in the government as well have had these backgrounds or they wouldn't react with the kind of policies they do.
Right.
But I've come into memory of those things, including some ritual abuse recently.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's been heavy. It's behind amnesic barriers, so it just came into the conscious.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's not fair. It's just not fair, but it happens.
Well, I'm swimming upstream right now and really trying to remain, you know, active in my life. And my question to you was, well, I've suffered with depression for many years, as you might imagine, and have been on Zoloft. Mm-hmm. And was curious, because George has done several programs on why that's not such a great idea. And whenever I try to get off, I'm on a very low dose to begin with, mm-hmm. only 50 milligrams.
Yeah.
But it's still difficult because then I get hit with the lack of serotonin, and it really doesn't do me a
well, good see, off. Everything has a place in healthcare, Alexia. The drugs do too. And while in general, I feel like George does, or his guests did, talking about the antidepressants and the anti-anxiety drugs mm-hmm. that we're using like water. And I'm so disappointed in our psychiatrists because they become psychopharmacologists. They should be ashamed of themselves because they're getting away from inside psychotherapy and to help people through any means they can to get well, because the antidepressants never solve a problem. But you're right. They can hold things in check, and there are times to do it. And so if you're on it and you're doing okay on it, don't change it, because what happened to you is a disaster. And trying to go through all that stuff and resolve it is a very, very difficult job. So I'm impressed that you can speak as you are, after what you've been through. God bless you.
Thank you for that, Lynn. Let's go to Gail in Statesville, North Carolina. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You are very welcome.
Listen, last week I was able to listen to you and Richard Weiss, I believe.
Brian Weiss.
Well, yes, Brian Weiss. And it got me to thinking. And since 2009, I've been having the epidurals. And you talked about that earlier with the meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
And my last episode or shot was June 13th. And I think I was right under the wire. And my body's been clean from it ever since. I know it's going to stay in there for a while, but my spinal column is really damaged. I have a lot of problems with my legs. And I just got to a point I felt like things weren't working. Questions I was asking my pain management, I was not getting the correct answers. Instead of gaining weight, I'm down to 94 pounds from 120. Primary doctor is from India. He says I should weigh a lot more than that. So he and I started talking and found out that he believes out of the box because of his culture, the same as I do. And I asked him if he would help me. So he has got me into acupuncture to start with.
Perfect.
I've weaned myself off of medications. They kept trying to give me more and more pharmaceuticals. And I'll tell you what, I think we're going to be on the right road. Like you said, healthy mind, body, spirit, and emotions. And as far as I'm concerned, we're also going into hypnotherapy. And after listening to Brian Weiss, my doctor actually knows him and has studied under him.
Good. He's
and
a good guy.
He's looking for somebody for me to go into past life recession also.
Okay. Sounds like you're doing it all right. That's good, Len.
Well, some of it is really good. I like the integrative approach. And I think far too often we rely on medications to try and solve this problem. And I'll have to tell you, you know, I sound like I'm a little bit different than the usual doctor out there from the point of view that I do complementary alternative medicine. But I don't think that Gail knows this, but I'm doing a $7 million research project sponsored by the National Institutes of Health now at the University of California in San Francisco on using infrared light therapy to treat conditions like what she has.
Good for you.
So we don't need to do epidurals.
I think that could be dramatic.
It's phenomenal. I can tell you that we can treat people who have diabetes with neuropathy. It is my opinion that if somebody who has diabetes with neuropathy, the painful numbness and loss of balance that comes with that, if it's not far advanced, we can reverse that in probably four or five treatments of 15 minutes using this light. It's absolutely stunning.
How does it work?
It increases blood flow. It reduces inflammation. It speeds up healing, according to NASA, by about 50%. It increases the amount of ATP, which is the energy currency of the cell. This is gasoline is energy for a car. ATP is for a cell. And it's that that makes the cells that don't get nourished enough because of an injury of some kind that they can start working again. And it happens in seconds. It's absolutely stunning.
Could it work on cancers?
I think it has an application there, but I have not used it to treat cancer. I think that's something that we need a lot of research for. So I wouldn't be going to my doctor for that.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we can grab one or two more callers. Elizabeth in Hoboken, New Jersey. Frank Sinatra's old place. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi. Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. And this was a wonderful show, and it's, as usual, so informative. Every time I listen to your shows, I get like the crash course, I swear. But
a little PhD.
Anyway, my question to the doctor is, I'm just wondering what he can say about the whole issues of ageism and sexism as they apply in allopathic medicine. That goes on. He mentioned earlier about, you know, these different, for years, you know, the AMA, as we know, is a very powerful lobby in
sure
Congress,
is.
And, you know, like the NRA, the way the NRA is, or the tobacco lobby used to be and is now no longer, thank God, or at least not as powerful as it used to be. But, you know, you mentioned that they were after, like, chiropractors and acupuncturists for years in another group. That they've been after for a long time are the midwives.
Yeah.
And now it's funny because everything, as you say, economics drives everything. Now, I dare say, if you, perhaps the doctor, I'm sure, will bear this out, if you go in most hospitals now, the nicest floor, almost guaranteed, of any hospital is the OBGYN ward, the maternity ward. It's because what was happening was that women were like, well, you know, you're not meeting our needs here, so we're going to do the equivalent of voting with our feet and therefore with our pocketbooks, and we'll just take our business elsewhere.
Yeah, that's right. It's all about the business. Len, we're running out of time here. Would you spell your website out for us?
Yeah, doctor spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O.com. So it's drsaputo.com. It's totally free.
Thank you, Len. Always good to have you on the program. Dr. Len Saputo. Up next, Marshall Klarfeld joins us. We'll talk about his work, the Anunnaki. We're here.